Okay, Rangers, you
Ranger.
Want to go
Ranger.
Go downstairs for the back with Dusty? Alright, in my mind that works so much better and was such a cool illustration, and it didn't work out as well as I was hoping it would, but that's alright. Well, good morning again. I'm going to take a quick poll this morning. How many of you have been to Disneyland or Disney World? Either of those parks at some point in time? Okay. How many of you would like to go back that have been there? There's actually a few less arms. Okay, all right. Sounds good. Maybe a poor experience or a bad experience or different things. I have been to both. It's been a while since I've been to either one, but at this point in time, I have very little interest to go back because, A, if I take all of my whole family, I just feel like that would just be a chaos. That would just be complete chaos with a, you know, a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old and three other ones running around all day. So that's point one. Point two is if I'm a 35-year-old going by myself, that feels creepy. I don't know why. That's probably not true. But so that's part of the reasons I don't anticipate going back in the near future. But when we think about Disneyland and we think about Disney World, There's just something I think younger kids kind of miss. I wouldn't mind taking like my 4-year-old. My 4-year-old's just got that personality that if he goes and he experiences certain things, it'd just be a lot of fun to see how he responds to certain aspects of it. But I think there's some things that I just think you appreciate as you get a little older. And so as they, you know, maybe in 5 or 10 years, the whole family will be able to go down and just appreciate everything that this, you know, the greatest place, the happiest place, what it's the happiest place on earth has to offer. But it's just interesting at Disney, at either of the parks, how they just create this environment, right? If you get into a line, right when you get into line, the experience of that ride starts. You see videos, or there's different things going on or happening, that you're getting prepared to go on this ride, this experience. The architecture obviously creates an environment, but the characters that walk around the streets also create an environment, right? And that's one of the reasons I'd like to take maybe my younger kids, because I just, especially Ash, would just be so excited to see like Buzz Lightyear walking around. Oh, I know him. It's Buzz Lightyear, and the excitement that he has, and would run up to him and that kind of thing. But it's interesting too that I think that kind of creates something real for kids, younger kids, as they see some of these characters right walking around dressed up as Cinderella or as, like I said, Buzz or Peter Pan or whoever. That there's something that kind of cements in their minds of a role model, right? I don't know if you guys have, when you were younger, or your kids or grandkids, have a hope or an anticipation of being like that Disney character, right? I don't know how many of you gals grew up thinking, I want to grow up and be Cinderella, right? Or for, you know, a different age, you're Belle, or now Elsa, and some of those are Moana. I think she's a princess, isn't she? Is Moana a princess? Has anybody seen Moana? I don't know if anybody's ever seen Moana. I sing the songs all the time. I don't know if I've seen the whole movie, but right, they have an anticipation for wanting to be one of those princesses, or the boys wanting to be Buzz Lightyear or Woody or Peter Pan or one of those kind of characters. And I think in some ways, going to Disney can kind of cement in their mind that they want to grow up and be that person or that character, and it becomes a little bit more real for them, maybe. But the truth is, the reality is, all of us know, you know, as we've grown up, if we're, you know, in our older years, realize that the hope and the anticipation to grow up to be one of those characters is pretty slim, right? My hopes of being an NFL football receiver for the Vikings died a long time ago, right? That hope has dissipated and disappeared. All of us, I think, probably had some kind of a hope or a goal as a younger child that maybe has fallen to the wayside to something a little bit more realistic. And the problem is, or the situation is that if we go to Disneyland and they, you know, our kids see Cinderella and they run up and want to have, you know, be Cinderella and have their, you know, at least at that time have their picture taken with Cinderella, the reality is there opportunities or their ability to become Cinderella or to become a princess are so slim, right? You know, I'm sure most of you got up and watched the royal wedding here this weekend, right? Everybody was up, I think it was like 4 o'clock, right? Some of you guys did, okay. Good for you. I was not. I did not do that at all. But their goal, their hope of being a princess or being a space cadet like Buzz Lightyear are so, so slim that they have a much better chance of being the intern that's taking their picture while they're with Cinderella or the person serving their food at Disney than they do of being these. Right? And that's a harsh reality. That's a pretty negative reality that I start with this morning. I kind of apologize for that, but that's the reality. Right? And we've been talking about this sermon series called Anything But Average. And in this idea of anything but average, I hope I popped your balloon a little bit. We're all pretty average, right? We all fall into the category of average. That's the nature of average. Is that me? Is it something I'm not on? That's why. That's why everybody's looking at me like I'm not on. Okay. You can yell at me, right? I am fine with that. Matt, you're not on, and now something's echoing in here now too, though, Tom. I don't know if it's one of the flying mics or something. Should I start all over? No, you don't want me to start all over. All right, we won't do that. All right. So, we're not going to be Disney characters. We're going to be Disney interns. That's the intro for us. We're all on the same page now. Okay. So, but the reality of being average, that's where we all kind of fall, is this idea of being in the average camp. And I'm guessing, I'll watch that. I'm guessing my batteries are dying, so we'll watch that. The idea of being average, we fall into the category of being average because average is what is most true of most of us most of the time, right? And that's kind of a harsh reality to take in a little bit. Being average is what is most true of most of us most of the time. And what the thing is with being average is nobody thinks that they're average, right? If I had started with a poll of saying who thinks they're average, in most situations, most of us probably wouldn't say we want to be there. And maybe we'd say for an honest second, I probably am average. But if in our heart of hearts, we don't think we're average. All of us think and consider ourselves anything but average or above average. And so in thinking about it that way, what we've been looking at in this series is this idea of what Jesus says. Jesus had a lot to say about what it meant to be average or what it meant to be anything but average. And he talked a lot about that in what is the most famous sermon, or one of the most famous sermons that we have in the book of Matthew. And he takes three chapters of Matthew 5, 6, and 7 to talk about some of these things, of what it means to be average and what Jesus calls us to be anything but average. And so what we've been talking about the last couple weeks, or actually before we jump into that, there's kind of two illustrations or two images that Jesus uses to express this idea of being average or anything but average. And the first one we'll talk about, or one of them we'll talk about in just a minute, but the other one we've talked about the last couple weeks are these paths. And we have kind of two paths, Jesus says. Basically, we have the wide path, and the wide path a lot of people find. The wide path is pretty well traveled. It's kind of the natural place that we fall as humans, is this wide path. And Jesus says, that wide path, that is average. That is what most people fall on. But then Jesus says, there's this other path. There is a path that's narrow. Not as many people find it. It's not as well traveled. There's lots of different things, reasons why, but it's not natural for us to fall into that narrow path. We have to go looking for it. But Jesus says if we can find that narrow path, if we can get down it and going on it, then that ultimately leads to life. It ultimately leads to abundance. It ultimately leads to God. And so we can choose the average wide path or the above average narrow path. And Jesus says ultimately that we have the option in that situation. And we've looked at the last couple weeks a couple different options that we have. First, a couple weeks ago we talked about how we can respond. We can respond to hurt and being stolen from, exploited, and burned over and over. We respond by being fair, right? And Jesus says the average, the wide path mentality is an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Retaliating to get back something that we've lost, right? We say the punishment fits the crime. I would say, and I haven't said this, there is a below average response, right? That's pretty easy to fall into where someone hurts me, I'm going to get them back and I'm going to push them a little bit further, right? It's the idea of practical jokes, and I shouldn't pick on practical jokes as much as I do, but, you know, if someone does a practical joke, you always have to do it. A practical joke, you have to always up it a little bit, right? You have to always do a little bit more than what the person did to you, kind of a thing. But the wide path, the average path, responds in kind. But Jesus says, no, there's a narrow path idea. There is a path that says, no, turn the other cheek, right? Be generous even if you've been stolen from. Go the extra mile. Do something different that's loving, something that's gracious. And then last week, we talked about how we view our life. The average view of life is looking at now. How can I satisfy what I need in the present, in the moment, in this life? How can I get enough stuff to be comfortable? That's the average wide path mentality. Jesus says, no, focus on forever. Does your choices, is your pursuit, the things that you're seeking after, do they focus on God? Do they focus on what he wants, and do they focus on forever? Or is there something that's now and average? The average response looks at now. Jesus says that the above average focuses on later. And so a couple of things that I just want to point out and keep us in mind as we go through, again, the Sermon on the Mount here, and kind of close it up and wrap it up, is one, Jesus is expecting a lot from us in this. Right, if you've read through the Sermon on the Mount, which even if you haven't been doing that, I encourage you to go back through those three chapters and just see again what Jesus had to say, especially after what we talked about this morning. I think it'll be really helpful. One is that he really gives us an impossible standard to live up to. None of us are going to be able to, especially by our own power, accomplish everything that he asks us to do. It is impossible on our own especially. But even with Jesus leading us, even with Jesus' power in our life, it's still ultimately impossible to live it out perfectly. And Jesus' point is saying that you need me. You need grace. You need forgiveness. You need me to come into your life. That's why I died on the cross. And that doesn't mean that we give up and we say, well, it's impossible. Why even try? That's not the point. Really, the point is Jesus is saying you need me and you need to have a heart change. Our hearts need to be impacted by what I'm saying here. Our hearts need to be adapted. Like we talked about with retaliation, we talked about getting back. Instead of it being an eye for an eye and a fairness kind of a thing, Jesus says, no, your heart should be one of forgiveness. Your heart should be one of grace. Being willing to give more than we deserve. Being able to hand out and return something that we've never been given. And it starts with a heart change. And over the last couple weeks, I've probably pressed the idea of the action, of the doing part of it, probably a little too hard than I should have, but it does ultimately all start with the heart. And so throughout the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus reveals to us what is average and what is anything but average. He tells us what we need to know and what we need to do to be average and above average. He tells us ultimately that average knows exactly what to do. And I'll talk about that more in just a minute. But ultimately, what we're looking at this morning is that there's a variety of viewpoints of average, of what average looks like and how average falls into it. Jesus has expressed several of them to us. But ultimately, we get caught up so often in this idea of being present, right, of attendance. We think attendance can be, we get kind of impressed with attendance, of showing up, right, getting our name checked off in the book or something like that. But really, showing up and being attendance is average, right? Any one of us can show up to a ball game. Any one of us, like I did, you know, show up to, like this week we had baccalaureate and we had eighth grade promotion. There's graduation this afternoon. We can show up for those things. And that's pretty average. Anybody can do that, right? I think but above average people not only show up, but there's something in their showing up that happens. They do something in it. And to be fair, at a basketball game, I feel like it's above average to show up and just show up and not yell at anybody. That's above average for me at this point, right? There is something about, you know, holding my tongue and those kind of things. But ultimately, anyway, you guys are all better sportsmen than I am. I'm a terrible sportsman. I realize this. Right, just showing up, though, is pretty average. Anybody can take up a seat in a bench. Anybody can sit in a pew and just be there. But there's a difference in mentality when we go and when we take what we've got when we're there, that we're doing something in it. And Jesus calls us, again, to being more than just taking up a spot, but to actually go and do something with it. And so at the end of this sermon that Jesus is giving in Matthew chapter 7, he wraps up kind of a long sermon and a long teaching day and doing all these different things that he has done for people. And then he says, there's something more. There's something that I want to take with you. Ultimately, he says, there's two types of people. And he has two types of people in his audience. And this morning, there's kind of basically going to be two types of people in ours as well. And you can glance at each other a little bit if you want and decide which one of the two you are. But we'll define those. Anyway, no, don't do that. That's weird. So there's two types of people. When we hear Jesus' words, when we hear from something, when we engage in something, there's kind of two options, and they fall into those paths.
And Jesus says, the wide path, the average path, they show up. They attend, but when they hear, when they engage, when they and maybe they understand there's something, maybe that happens, but when they leave, they just go home. They just go back to their regular life. And Jesus' audience is no different. There's going to be a group of people that leave, and nothing changes for them. But Jesus also knows in his audience there's going to be those that experience him, that understand him, and they go and something is different. They go and there's something that changes in their lives. And this is how Jesus expresses it in Matthew 7, verses 24 through 27. Ultimately, he says, everyone who hears these words of mine. And then he's going to give us two illustrations, and you can see them here on the screen. Everyone hears these words of mine, and blanks will be like, and you can all fill in the blank because you've read this before and heard this before, but we're going to have some fun with it. We'll be like a wise man, and everyone who hears these words of mine, and blank will be like a foolish man, right? We kind of have two illustrations that Jesus gives us. And so let's fill in the blanks. First, we'll put up in this idea of everyone who hears these words of mine and understands will be like a wise man. Who does not understand would be like a foolish man, right? That we, in our culture, in our church tradition, we like to understand. We like to get knowledge. We like to get information. And we think that that's kind of the end all. As long as you understand, as long as you get the information, then you're doing pretty good. But no, that's not what Jesus says. Maybe he says, everyone who hears these words of mine and takes notes, right? Some of you guys maybe take notes. There's a few of you out there that take notes. Right? That's important. Notes help us remember, right? We leave a little bit of space in the bulletin for you guys to take a few notes, right? No, Jesus doesn't say take notes either. I think this one's probably my favorite. He hears these words of mine and shares them on Facebook. We'll be like the wise man. And who does not share them on Facebook is the foolish man. Those of you that don't have Facebook just don't have any chance at any of these, so I don't know where you're at. But, you know, sometimes we get caught up in how important it is to post things there, to share our opinion on that. But no, that's not what Jesus says. We know that this is what Jesus says. Everyone who hears these words of mine and does them, will be like the wise man who built his house on the rock. Another translation says puts them into practice, right? Maybe you've heard it that way in different ways. There's something that happens. There's something that is done. And just again, like we all think we're above average, a lot of us, if not all of us, think that we're pretty wise. And I don't, I feel like I'm real negative and I'm really kind of coming down in some ways. When we look at these stories, when we look at what Jesus says especially, but even in books that you read, right? When you read a book or you watch a movie, who do you automatically connect with, right? Who do you see yourself as in those stories, right? None of us see us ourselves as the bad guy, right? None of us see us as Jafar. You guys, Aladdin, I'm trying to think of other bad guys, but or Captain Hook, right? None of us are Captain Hook or Jafar, right? We're always Aladdin. We're Peter Pan. In this story, we're the wise man, right? Or wise woman, right? That's who we are. That's just naturally how we align ourselves. That's human nature. But to be honest, if we started to look at what Jesus has to say here, are we really always the wise man? Do we often fall into the wise man category, or do we not? And I'm not going to call anybody a fool, at least not to your face, all right? I'm not that bold. And I like to, you know, I like how my face looks. I don't want it broken in different places. So that kind of thing. But Jesus challenges us. He really challenges us here. And we can so easily brush it off, and we can say, yeah, Jesus, I'm a wise man. I do all those things. But I look at my own life, and I wonder, how wise am I? Do I really, like Jesus says, do the things that he asks us? Do I put into practice the words that he has taught and said? But the thing is that Jesus gives us a promise in all of this. Right? He says, the wise man who builds us, who does these words of mine, right, puts them into practice, is the wise man who builds his house on the rock. And he says this in 25, the rain fell, the floods came, the winds blew and beat on the house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. And remember, the rock, to build it on the foundation of the rock, in that culture, in that their culture, their geographic situation, they would have to dig down deep to build on the rock. They would have to do a lot of work, right? And they didn't have backhoes and excavators and those kind of things to dig down and build on the rock. But Jesus also promises two things in this. One, the most important thing that we remember is that when we build it on the rock, when we do what Jesus tells us to do, what Jesus calls us to do, then we will be on that rock, and we will be able to sustain and persevere. But the other thing he promises, the rains are going to come. The floods are going to rise. The wind's going to beat. It's going to happen. There's no guarantee. What I want Jesus to say is that when you build your house on the rock, everything's going to be great, right? It's going to be one big party. You're going to have so much fun, and it's going to be peaceful and relaxing. It's going to be like vacation, right? And that's what I want Jesus to say. You do these words of mine, you put these things into practice, everything's going to be great. It's going to be wonderful. And I don't know, maybe you had, did anybody have that anticipation when we started to, you know, when you came into faith, when you started to know who Jesus was? I think sometimes we have that anticipation. He's going to take away all this worry. He's going to do all these different things. But we know the reality, and Jesus promises the rains are going to come. Things are going to be pretty awful at times. Relationships are going to be stretched and torn and ripped apart. Jobs are going to be lost. People we love are going to be lost. But Jesus says, when we put these words into practice, the things that Jesus has asked us to do, the way we react to people, the way that we interact with him, then ultimately, as we go through those, we can persevere in a way that's different than the average. And then Jesus gives us the opposite example in 26. He says, everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who has built his house on the sand. And when the rain fell, the floods came, the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell. And how great was the fall of it. So I want you to imagine, if you will, that you're at a beach, right? And it kind of feels in here that we're at the beach a little bit right now, so maybe that's just me, I guess. But you're at the beach, and I encourage you, actually, I want you to do this, and no one's going to do this, but I'm just going to encourage you to do it. If you go to a beach this summer, whether it's the ocean or some other beach, I want you to do this. I want you to get as close to the water as you can, because the sand's better there. Trust me, the sand's better closer to the water. And I want you to build an enormous sandcastle, right? Spend some time on it. Actually, spend several hours on it and build it and just as massively as you can, tall and wide. You know, try to get it just to be huge. I'll be at the beach this summer, kind of a beach, I guess, and I'll try to do this too. I want you to send me pictures. Take a selfie with you in the thing in the background. If you need to get a selfie stick, I'm sure there's some gal running around that has one that you can borrow. So take a picture, you in the sandcastle, and I want you to send it to me. Right? Make sure it's close to the water. Make sure you spend a lot of time on it. Make sure you put a lot of effort into it and try to do as much as you can. Maybe even go buy some extra tools. You know, if you need to go buy an excavator and, you know, dig up the sand and, you know, so you can pile it up and that kind of thing. Maybe rent one at this point. That's better for the environment. And then I want you to be excited about it. Put as much heart and soul as you can into it, okay? And then I want you to, after you take your picture and everything, you leave for the day, I want you to come back the next day, and I want you to take another picture. And I want you to be just as excited as you were the day before, the next day when you go and look at your sandcastle and what's there on the sand. Probably nothing, right? It's probably been washed away. If not that, it's at least been eroded away to a large extent. Because that's ridiculous. No one's going to go build a sandcastle right next to the sand and anticipate that it's going to be there for very long, right? Maybe you do anticipate. I don't know. You can have hopes, I guess, with that kind of stuff. But I think that's a ridiculous example. And the reason I use that a ridiculous example is because we do that. I do that. I've actually never actually literally done that before, because that's ridiculous, like I said. But in my life, I do that. In my life, I regularly and consistently expect a certain thing, and then the castle's been washed away. I put time and effort and resources into something, but I do it my way, or I do it by my own power, or I do it the way that I think it should be done, and I don't do it the way Jesus calls me to do it. A relationship. Something at my work, something in different ways, and I build this sandcastle, and I build this expectation, and the next day I come back, and it's gone. How do you feel if you spend hours and hours on a sandcastle, build it all the way up, and it's this glorious architectural, magnificent architectural design, and it's gone? Yeah, you don't feel pretty good. You don't feel very good about that. And we feel kind of the same way when we put so much into something and we do it by our own standards, we do it our own way, we go down the wide path. And when the rains come and things tear it apart, things fall apart. In so many ways in my life, I end up being the fool. I end up not following through with the things that Jesus has called me to do. I don't follow through with the choices that I've decided to make in my relationship with Him. And as much as I want to call myself a wise man, right? As much as I want to call myself wise and mature and whatever else, I'm a fool a lot of times. And I hope you're not like me. I hope you are. And I have a feeling that a lot of us are kind of the same in that boat. But the choices I make, the relationships I damage, end up being really, really foolish. And Jesus says, ultimately, the thing that's going to change is our follow through. Follow through determines whether we have a firm or faulty foundation. And as important as it is, like I said, the heart change is the most important thing. Our hearts need to change first. But then going and doing something is what's going to change the outcome. Average people know what to do, and that's great. Knowing what to do is important, but Jesus says anything but average people know or do what they know. Anything but average people do what they know. And so we didn't look at all of Jesus' words. Most of us here this morning have read Jesus' words, have done study in his words or looked at his words. But the question I want to ask and leave us with is, what do we know to do that we're not doing? What do we know to do that we're not doing? It's not really all that complicated. I'm not saying go and find something new to do. I'm not saying go and research. I'm not saying even go and read more of Jesus' words, as important as that is. I'm saying we all know something that we can go and probably even a should, right? We think, oh, I should do or I ought to do this. What aren't we doing that we should be doing? And it's hard, right? Because if it was easy, we'd already be doing it, right? And we have excuses and we have reasons why we're not going to go and we're not going to do it. She doesn't deserve it, right? He needs to do all of these things before that's going to happen, right? The circumstances, the situation, it's just too much. It's overwhelming. So I can't do anything. I'm not going to do anything. There's a lot of fear. And for me, that's a big one. What if I fail? What if they laugh at me? What if I look ridiculous? We all have an answer to that. We all have something, if I did this, I know this would change this. If I did this, it'd be a little better. We don't have all the answers. We have the answers for everybody else, right? If somebody came and asked us, yeah, I have an answer. Well, I know what they're dealing with. I have an answer, right? We have the answers for each other pretty easily. But no one has all the answers to every situation or the perfect answer. But we all have an answer. We all have a step that we can take, a should that we feel like has been placed in our heart and our mind to change the circumstances and the situations. Putting into practice, doing what Jesus calls us to do. Because Jesus says if we're not doing that thing, then we're average. We know to do it, but we're not doing it. That's average. Jesus says, no, above average people are people that do it. That do what they know. So I want you to imagine that after years, you've been going to the same dentist. I know you guys are excited about this imagery. Here, all right. You're going to go into the same dentist for years and years and years, but you decide to try a new one. A new one moves into town, you go and check him out. And after taking x-rays and looking at your teeth and different other things, you've realized, and the dentist realizes, that your teeth have not been adequately taken care of, however I want to say that. Your teeth have not been taken care of well at all by the previous dentist. And you're a little angry or frustrated at first, but you can tell that that's true too. There's no guesswork. You can see that it's not being, your teeth have not been taken care of the way they should have. And so you decide, you ask the dentist, well, how could my previous dentist have done such careless work? And he glances at you and he smiles and he asks you a question back. He says, well, what do they call the man who graduates from medical school at the bottom of his class? And you stop for a second and you ponder, well, I don't know, what do they call the man who graduates from medical school at the bottom of their class? And the dentist smiles and looks at you and he says, well, they call him doctor. And the reason they call him doctor, and yes, he accomplished medical school and he did all these kind of things, but the average doctor may still be a doctor. The average dentist may still be a dentist, but that doesn't make him above average. And we all do different things and we all go through life and we all have different roles and jobs and occupations and situations that we find ourselves in. But all of us are called to a different standard. And we can get through life just fine by being average, by just finishing medical school, by just accomplishing that goal, by getting by. But Jesus calls us to so much more, to exceed the average, to take care of those around us well. If we want a life, ultimately, Jesus says, that leads to abundance, that leads to him, then we need to seek anything but average. Let's pray. Gracious Father, we thank you so much for your Son. We thank you that you call us to something greater, something more than being just average. And we pray, Lord, that you lead and guide and direct us to do something. Change our hearts, change our minds first, but then direct us and guide us towards that narrow path, towards that wise foundation in you. I pray this all in your Son Jesus' name. Amen. Worship team's going to come on forward. As we close this morning, as we have our time for invitation, the floor is open. We have an opportunity to come forward as you feel led.